Hi, my name is Mike Bucci, and I interview everyday dads taking extraordinary actions to improve their family's lives by growing a business for purpose or for profit to learn their why, their when, and their hows, so you can take what you need, model their behavior, and take immediate action. Welcome to the Dadgepreneur Code.
Feeling good over here. We're feeling good. This is, you're one of the special people that we wanted to have be in the first set of interviews because without question, you know, you have an awesome show. You have an awesome following on your podcast, on your Wednesday lives. Your interviews are awesome. And I remember when I started looking at how to add value to dads that are either starting a side hustle or some type of project that's for passion or for profit, I thought of you because you were one of the first people that I knew that really, you know, wasn't like this successful business guy out of the gate. You're a teacher. You work in education, but you had some, you had some passion about starting something that kept you going. And I'm sure you had your own reasons. So I'm really excited to have you because I'm sure a lot of people want to learn more about you.
So you're sure you want to have me this early out of the gate?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. You're one of those guys that's going to bring some fire to Dadgepreneur Nations.
Yeah, I play a little bit there, Mike, but it means a lot, man. You and I don't think we should gloss over how we met because when you think about getting invited to kind of a mutual friend to meet with you, someone you're mentoring, I took a lot of credit for something right out of the gate that for saying yes. You kind of got this idea out of the clear blue sky that a former student athlete of mine said he was being mentored by you. He said, I'd like you to come in and sit on a meeting. I got to tell you, Mike, 9 out of 10 people I know would have said no because it would have been a hassle, because it would have been something difficult to do, because it would have been something that would have been easier to say no to. It didn't even occur to me. So on two levels, I've always prided myself in coming from a place of yes. It sounds corny. It sounds cliche. But some of these cliche things are cliche for a reason. So when the person you were mentoring said, would you be interested? My answer was immediately yes, and let's find out more about it. So people listening have to drive that point home. If we get nothing else accomplished, I think everyone else listening knows someone who would say no and continues to say no. And you're getting internet messaging from all corners that says, be more selective with your yeses. Say no to protect your time. I think it's garbage. I think it's garbage. I think it shouldn't take you away from your family. I think it shouldn't be at the expense of your health, physical and mental.
Sure.
But let's not kid ourselves and say that more people listening can't say yes to more interesting opportunities. So I'm so glad that I said yes to that. It's led me to this path, my man.
Yeah, I'm glad you framed it that way. I remember a long time ago, learning from like sales coaches on philosophy and trying to help people make decisions. And I remember one time somebody said to me that I should say to people, which I never do, I never say this, but they say that you never benefited from anything you said no to. You only really have ever benefited from things that you've said yes to. Isn't that right? And I just say, saying that. But at the same time, you learn, you know, even if you make mistakes. So, you know, Joe, one thing that I want to do right away is I want, you know, people to kind of get to know you a little bit. So why should we really care about Joe Farrar? What are you all about? Tell us what you do and tell us a little background on what this side hustle is.
Well, I think you should only care if I can add value to you, because there's so many people that you can get value from. So in no way, shape or form am I going to come on the show and say that I'm the only person, but I think my story can resonate with entrepreneurs because that side hustle piece, that and piece, that yes and what else piece is where I'm living. I'm a 41-year-old teacher in this 20th year in the classroom. And when people say, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to write a book? Do you want to do a speaking tour? If I say yes to those things, it's only in addition to the classroom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've learned over the last 10 years of my career that my worlds blend pretty beautifully. So I get a chance to be a high school English teacher who teaches public speaking, creative writing, and English 12. So you got the last chance to kind of get your stamp on these kids before they go out into the world. And I take a lot of pride in that. So none of what I do is in an effort to say he's a disgruntled teacher, he wants out of the classroom.
Yep.
I'm loving it. I'm thriving. And it's like, I try to teach my students, like, this is how I see myself and here's how the world sees me. And if we can kind of get them to align a little bit, and now you're the same person in your classroom that you can be on your podcast and
you can be out
in the world. So that's the kind of idea of where I'm at. In the meantime, I just launched episode 78 of a podcast I basically haven't missed a week since July of 2017. And
you stole my steal from me.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, Mike. It's not because I feel great every day. It's not because, oh, this is going to be the special episode. It's that I said I was going to launch an episode every week, and that's what has to happen. So every Sunday, 5 p.m., you're getting a new episode. And 1 week, it'll be with an author or a storyteller or a businessman or woman. Next, it's a little bit more what you're doing so far. And I know your project's zagging and zigging, but it's just been such an exciting thing.
Yeah.
And I think that I bring a kind of a generalist perspective. I don't feel like I specialize in any one thing.
No, the things I've listened to, Joe, so far, I've heard you dealing with struggle. I've heard with you talking about goals, like pain and gain. So when you were starting and you were going through this, when you really started off, were you deciding that you actually, were you going through a struggle that you wanted to help other people get through the same stuff? Or was it that you saw something going on that you said you can go add value and positivity? So was it more creation, or was it more you were helping people with the struggle you were also dealing with?
Well, I think I had an itch. You know, I have to be honest and candid with your listeners and with you. It's I've always wanted to communicate. You know, I majored in literature and communications with a secondary ed minor. So I really was able to sculpt my experience at Pace to be more of a communicator who also teaches, as opposed to that kid who grew up teaching his stuffed animals and knew that this was the thing. He had to be a teacher. That's not what I had. I had the idea that I wanted to communicate in some way, whether it's verbal or writing. And, you know, I was the guy that was playing baseball my whole life. I played college baseball. And then I would also be kind of broadcasting the game in my head. I would be going to a wiffle ball game with my family. And I would be, you know, running up to my aunt afterwards and saying, how'd you feel after getting that game getting hit? So I lived in two worlds. And then when my great friend Kevin Wilson, he's a Major League Baseball hitting consultant. He heard about this thing called a podcast. And he just had no clue what to do, how to do it, and wouldn't do it without me. So we started something in 2004 where we were interviewing Major League Baseball players and managers and had absolutely no idea what we're doing with the craft of it. And then we still kept that project going, and it's been very successful. But in the midst of that, he kept pushing me out of the nest. He kept saying, yeah, but you want to interview authors outside of baseball. You want to talk to chefs and see how they get 1% better every week. You want to talk to people that are in education or in business like Mike. You can't do that on a baseball show. So that was the first thing, to kind of follow that itch of, you know, when I wanted to learn poker, I learned poker. When I wanted to learn teaching, I wanted to go to workshops. I just was craving the learning. And then if I could take my learning that I did, supercharge it, and then pass it on, now we got something. Now we're hitting every world, the teaching and the learning right there.
So, I mean, if you were doing the podcast already with your friend, the guy with the bait, what was his name again?
Kevin Wilson.
So you're doing the podcast with Kevin Wilson. When did it hit you that you said, you know what, Kevin's freaking right. I gotta start something. When did 1% better come to fruition? How did that happen? Because that's got to be a really cool story. You know, when did you say, I got to do something about it?
Yeah, there's two parts to that I think are worth sharing. And one is, we started talking about his guest booking, and he had a different philosophy of what kind of guests he wanted to bring on the show.
Yep.
So we're going back and forth, and I would suggest a guy, and he's like, nah, not for me. Really? I thought this guy was perfect, and I like it, but no thanks. And we're partners in this. And then he says, how about this guy? This guy's going to be perfect. And he goes, oh, he can't tell a story. Can't have him on there. And this is a legend in the game of baseball. I'm like,
right.
So I'm saying every time I bring a guest to him, he's saying no. That's one of my best friends. And that was one of those pain points that you talk about with your listeners, where it was like, if I could get to a place to be a grown-up, have no bitterness, but know that I saw something a different way, I said, here's what we're going to do. No hard feeling. I want you to become the 100% guest booker. When I do my own show, that's when I'll get to book my guests. I'll show up, I'll research, and I'll interview the heck out of whoever you put in front of me. But I want nothing to do with that, let's keep banging our head against the wall moment, like, hey, you don't like Mike. So that's big for me, Mike, because your listeners might be able to relate to this. Taking one of your best friends, mixing business with pleasure, not necessarily a great idea, especially when you don't have it all organized ahead of time.
Yeah, right.
We're starting and going. Make a long story short, he took it well, I took it well, and we're still friends and business, so it's beautiful that way. So that's the pain point. In the meantime, his motives were so selfless, he kept saying, when are we going with yours? What's it going to be called? What's all this happening? What are you interested in?
Yeah.
I can zip to the end just a bit and say, he said that on the show, he basically talked me into putting out a deadline. So he talked me into putting a deadline on air.
Nice.
That's so good. On KWB, if you go back in the files, you'll hear a July 1st date thrown out there.
And which year was that? I'm curious.
So let's say I started on 2017, 1% better. So 2016, I'll find the episode for your listeners. Yeah. Somewhere in 2016, I said July 1st, I'm doing this. Because that July 1st is that beautiful time when teachers now in the summer, your mind is clear.
I know all about it. I know all about it.
Yeah, June is a Friday, July is a Saturday, August is a Sunday mentality. And so July 1st, I said, so I did, your listeners are like, well, you must have had a really organized plan. No. I was hoping July 1st came and went. So I've interviewed some New York Times bestsellers. You know this. I've met people, I've got a chance to travel to San Antonio to speak. But all of that aside, I didn't want to launch. I came up with every excuse in the book. Kevin came to my house on June 28th, 2017, and he said, you ready to go? I said, ready to go where? Where are we going? You're launching in 2 days, man, 3 days. What's going on here? I don't have a website.
Yeah.
I don't know what the thing's called yet. You said 1% better. I don't have a theme song. I kept hitting them with every single excuse in the book. To the point where he's like, I'm not leaving until you do it.
Good.
Eventually, I said, you got to get out of here. I got to do it. And I got to the point where I literally was a credit card away from buying the domain. And that almost tripped me up. Like, how much is this? $7 a month.
Oh, dude.
I don't know if I could do $7 a month. That's reoccurring. And Mike, every month? Every excuse in the book.
Hey, yeah.
So when people say, man, podcast is good, or man, you've met a lot of interesting people, I want everybody to hear that I still had 30 excuses why I didn't want to do it. It doesn't feel right. I don't know if you've experienced this, but for me, you're never ready. There's never been a feeling in my life where I can say, I know 100% I'm ready.
You know, I have so much excuse. I have so much experience with this because I have 3 kids. My wife uses that same line on me every single time. She'll say, well, we weren't ready for the house. And
ready for the baby.
You ever ready to have a kid? Ever ready to have a second kid? All you thatchpreneurs know what I'm talking about. So, Joe, here's my first question that you probably didn't see coming. When you look at all those fears and you looked at whether or not you should take out your card and whether or not you should do this podcast, who's the one person you thought of that you said to yourself, man, if I disappoint this person, that's going to be the end of my ego. That'll be the end of me. I don't know if I can do this because I'm afraid of letting this person down. Did you have anything like that going on in your life like most people?
Well, I have the benefit of 96 students that I stand in front of every day, and I never say the word podcast or follow me or any of that. But I do say to them, face your fears. I say to them, what's the worst that could happen? I say to them, if you can get past 10 seconds of discomfort, if I say to them, keep walking and then you can change course. And then I go to my personal life and that where I'm trying to be a professional and all of a sudden that doesn't apply to me. That's a hard Monday morning in September when I thought Mr. Ferraro had everything, thought he knew, he's telling us one thing and instead he's doing.
Wow.
You know,
so it's not a spouse, not a partner, it's not a parent, it's the kids that you're molding every day. You had to kind of be an example for that. That's pretty big, Joe.
Without them knowing it, you know what I mean? It's not like we have on the vision board in the classroom.
Got it.
Mr. Ferraro's got to do it. It's here and it's here, and I can't preach one thing at this stage of my career and do the other.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. So let's rewind back. So it's July and you're thinking of the kids and I got to get this going. So just give me the one page business plan. So high level, all right, this is what I'm going to do. What were like the first five or six things you said, I got to go crush these things. This is what I'm going to do on my own. This is what I'm going to hire somebody else to do. Just give me the one page business plan.
Well, the business plan is that those details and that execution is not my forte, you know? Mm-hmm. And if I thought about it, maybe I would have hired someone, but instead I'm getting in the trenches and doing it myself. Mm-hmm. Here's what I would like to do is I'd like to interview people. I love having conversations. I love learning from people. And my commute from Connecticut to where I work in Westchester County, 45, 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I often say that I listen to a podcast and a half a day. I'll get through one on the way there, on the way back, you know, a little bit of music to decompress and another podcast. And I just had that feeling like, I can do this. Mm. Mike, I had no idea. You got to be the guy that does the promos. You got to be the guy who does the quote images. You got to be the, like, I had this idea in my head, like someone else is going to ride in with a white coat and say, I'll do all that. And it doesn't work that way. So now I've had to learn three different software programs and all the things that, you know, like that myth that we tell people, we say, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Like, yeah.
I thought that was true for a while, but what we overlook was you're not going to love 100% of that job.
Yeah, no.
It just doesn't, for me, I haven't found that. I love teaching.
Hopefully not.
That doesn't mean the day after the Super Bowl, you're ready to rock and roll on Monday. It doesn't mean that when you're doing the data plans and the assessing what we need to do next, that you're going to love that. Yeah. So I don't love doing the internet promotion, finding that line. My business plan was let's create great content. Let's get more great content. And then let's adjust as we go.
Yeah. I'm happy you said that because, you know, a lot of people, I think once they start to actually take action, all of a sudden they realize, you know, there is some competency that I'm lacking and I didn't even know. I like to call it unconscious incompetence. So unconscious incompetence, that's when you don't even know how bad you are. And then once you get to conscious incompetence, I think that's when a lot of people quit or stop, or like I say, or like you said, I got to get my logo. I have to get my theme song. They start to do all that stuff and sabotage themselves. So how long did it take for you to just blow through that mode and keep going? Did you stall for a while between July and August? Did it take, you know, 6 months? How did you kind of blow through that? How long did it take?
Well, that you think about the June of 2017, where now you finally finished year, I guess, 18 in the classroom, and you finally exhale and it's 100 degrees and you're kind of like, all right, the easiest thing to do now is put your feet up and coast and enjoy summer break with your wife and kids.
Yeah.
Have that July 1st looming. So it really was the physical manifestation of Kevin coming to my dinner table uninvited that, you know, just said, how are we going to do this? I got to imagine everybody listening has somebody like that in their life that honestly is a little annoying. I mean, that was annoying to see him show up at my door to actually like come. Like, it's not like we're hanging out watching the game. He's like knocking on the door and he might as well be the Grim Reaper. and I didn't like it. But so that's the physical part. But I think it's important to underline this.
Yeah.
I have a show coming out on Sunday and I still got to get in the studio. It's not like I skip to the studio I made in my house, like, with fairy dust coming behind me, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
It's still going to feel like there's days where, I'll speak for myself, there's days where you don't want to do it. And I've learned to hone the muscle that says do it anyway.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Can you remember a time where you kind of stopped and you looked down and said, oh my God, like, I'm doing this? You know, was it episode 10? Was it episode 50? Have you even had that experience yet? But you know, sometimes when people have a business, they get to a spot where they say, oh my gosh, this is really, really working. So did you have that moment yet?
I've had a few of them along the way. The one that comes to mind I've spoken about on the show and those that have been in the journey since the beginning, which I don't typically recommend people when they find a new podcast. Today, hopefully we'll find some people to help. And I wouldn't say go back to episode one, except in that you'll see how bad I was. So if someone's listening now, I would say, check out episode one, Who Was I to Launch a Podcast?
And that's good.
Episode 15. And like, I would do that and then I would hand pick what you like. But the reason I bring that up is because I had an author, kind of a North Star of an author in mind when I started this project. It's like, if the white whale, if I could land Seth Godin. Seth Godin was a guy whose blog has been in my atmosphere for years. And this guy speaks all over the world. And for whatever series of reasons, Mike, everything he writes, it hits me right here. It hits me right here. And I just wrestle with it and love it. I literally start every day by reading one of his blog posts. So I sent him an impassioned email about how I wanted to have him on episode one. I said, this is my guy. Let's come out of the gate hard. I want him on episode one. He writes back a very polite email that basically says, I never go on podcasts. I certainly never go on podcast episode one. He goes, ping me when you are at episode 100. 100. So he counters, you know about that. He counter offers with 100.
Oh my God.
That hits me right in the teeth. And I'm like, this is my guy. If I can't see it.
Exploding.
Hey, I'll help you out. Now look, in retrospect, it's a bold offer to say episode one.
Yeah, sure.
So I take a few moments, I take a day, and I take the fingers and I loosen them up, and we dive into the email. And I write back this passionate email that I have to find, but for my narrative, I don't want to know exactly what it said, because in my head, it was the second greatest piece of writing I've ever written, aside from that. Right? I wanted to do something special for my wife once, so I wrote a long letter. That's a story for next episode. But Seth now has the second best episode thing I've ever written. I say, Seth, you wouldn't respect me in the morning if I accepted that. I can't accept episode 100. I may not live that long. Most podcasts don't last 7 episodes.
Good.
Congratulations on getting past that hurdle, by the way.
Thank you.
So all of a sudden, we're just rocking and rolling. And the whole thing, he writes back. I see the response very quickly. I'm like, Seth's responded pretty quickly. This can't be good news.
Yeah, it's the autoresponder.
The email does say, though, it says, you make a good point. Ping me after episode 20 airs. So we've gone from 100
to
20.
We're on.
So at that point, I respect it. I put my head down, put my nose down, get back to work. And if you now were to listen to episodes 18, 19, 20, first of all, they're great episodes. Jeremy Schiedinger is a guy I love on episode 18. But you'll see the trajectory when I started to feel it a little bit, if I could say that so boldly. It was like, I have a clue what I'm doing. I have a validation that I, for whatever reason, needed up ahead.
Sure.
And at the very end of episode 20, the last thing I say, spoiler alert, is I say, well, if you'll forgive me now, I need to go ping someone. And then the music comes on, and I'm in the studio going like this, let's go.
Let's do it.
And I know that I can then write back to Seth, and here we go. And lo and behold.
That's a great story.
He was on episode 26, came back on episode 66, and I feel like there's a lot there for people who are dads with a lot of people they admire to take away from that.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great story. I appreciate you sharing that, because – That's kind of a moment where you can say, man, I am doing this. I got this guy. Forget the guy to go from 100 to 20, although that's really cool. You actually engage somebody that, you know, is a published author and a marketing expert and had a good conversation. I think in today's days of, you know, internet marketing and digital marketing and social media, you know, a lot of those barriers are gone, where you had a gatekeeper a long time ago. Now you could just tweet at somebody. Maybe you can retweet a bunch of times. I mean, I'm in communication with a couple of real good thought leaders right now, just because I'm constantly just liking their stuff and engaging with them. They know I'm a serious fan of the way that they think, et cetera. So, thanks a lot for sharing that. And another question to follow up on that was, do you feel that you use your podcasting in the beginning as a way to find your voice? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, without a doubt. I got to cut you off with excitement, because there's days where I'm still listening to it going, I wonder if that's really how I want it to sound. You know, and I have a few people in my head that, do I want to sound like this broadcaster? Do I want to be more like this guy? Someone once told me I sound like this guy. And then I'm like, well, is that even helpful? So those have kind of become like the goalposts. But I really want to continue to hone my voice. Hopefully, you know, your nation can see that. I don't know. I mean, I find myself to be a serious guy, but I like to blend in the silly. I mean, on the show, you'll know I'm making jokes here and there. I'm talking about how to find the best wine with carbonara. I'm talking about how to, what coffee is really the best in the morning. So I like that piece of optimization of your day. But I also want to just sit around and think about an idea that I see on your Instagram page a lot. So yes, you start the podcast, and I think this is crucially important, something I write about. You got to start and then readjust. I feel like, you know, motion breeds emotion. We've all heard that. You start, and it's so much easier to just kind of take the wheel and just move it slightly, just move it slightly. But going from zero to one, as Peter Thiel might say, that's hard. That's extremely hard.
Yeah. Did you, when you were trying to learn your voice, et cetera, did you find some type of book that spoke to you or a course that you took that said, this is the way I really want to start or go? Or did you just really just do this on the fly with the purpose of, I want to make people 1% better and I'm just going to figure this out on my own? Kind of talking about those early days of how you kept going in a space that you had zero experience in before you started.
When I moved far away from my workplace, I knew that one of the challenges was that commute. And the books on tape or podcast, whatever it was going to be, was going to be crucially important. Sports talk in the morning wasn't going to be enough for me.
Yeah. So
I remember listening to a couple of early, early podcasts. And a gentleman by the name of Andy Traub, T-R-A-U-B, he was a guy that I would listen to his podcast. And he had some admiration for Seth, and he kept going. And so I would email him for advice on if I ever wanted to launch something, what book should I read, what course should I take.
Sure.
He would humor me for a little bit. And then the final email between us was, here's the book I think you should read, but then you have to do something, because learning without action is futile.
Yeah. Good.
And I was like, I don't even know this guy. And he was basically saying, I can't help you unless you're willing to move forward. Yeah. So it wasn't a course, but it was, you've heard before, like that automobile university where your car becomes a classroom because you're not listening to sports talk in the morning. And when I say that, I'm talking directly to the dads who say, yeah, but I'm stressed in the morning. You don't know about my job in the morning. It's stressful. So I want to hear these sports talk guys, and I want to listen to Z100, and I don't want to be listening to a boring guy talk about it.
Yeah.
And I get that. But for me, that was a time, a captive audience of 50 minutes one way a day.
Yeah.
I wasn't willing to squander it. So yes, it's cool if you guys are listening to sports talk radio, but then don't also turn around and say, but how do you find so much time to read or learn?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, Joe, I agree. I think a lot of people get stuck in the learning versus earning phase. And I can speak for myself for sure. I'm a victim of this as a dadpreneur. I think many times in your life, people that put us down, entrepreneurs, they call it shiny box syndrome, where you see a shiny box and it's, oh, look, a squirrel, and you're off to do something new. The reality is a lot of us need to find what we want to do for passion or for a profit from a side hustle perspective. And I keep using the word side hustle, but a calling, you know, something outside of what you're doing with your regular 9-to-5. But I think many times what people do is, and this is the point of your mentor or that resource you were just describing, is we'll buy a book for the dopamine effect it has of, I have an answer now in my hand. And if I don't do anything, it's okay, because I bought the book from Amazon. If it shows up in my house, that's enough. Or I have an Audible account with 35 audiobooks in them. I've listened to 4 of them, but that's okay because I pay $15 a month. So that's okay. No, what ends up happening is those behaviors, I feel, end up bringing you down later. It's almost like proof of concept that, you know, I bought all these books. I have all these Audible books. I have all the answers, but here I am. I'm still stuck. And you actually sabotage yourself from that. So that's great advice that your friend told you, because yeah, if you don't take immediate action from something that you read now, it can hurt you. There's one thing, I forgot who just gave this to me, but they said, oh, it was Steve Larson. And this was all a ruse, but the lesson was good. He said, take this book. If you'll read it for 20 minutes every day and take 40 minutes after you read it for 20 minutes every day for a year, you will not recognize your life in a year. Now, the story goes on in another direction. The point is, if you read for 20 minutes, but then take action for 40 afterwards.
Yeah. And
you have a chance.
And I won't spoil it for the listeners, but I'll use what you just said as an example of being honest about myself, which is I'm not real comfortable telling people what I do well. You know, it's always nice to hear that from someone else.
Yeah.
But one thing that I always feel comfortable telling people, and especially dadgepreneurs, that I think I do well is I do act, and I try to act in ways that other people wouldn't. The things that people would skip over. So, for example, I heard on episode 6, I want to say, of Dadgepreneur Nation and Code, you used the name Steve Larson, and I've never heard of Steve Larson. You didn't tell me to listen to Steve Larson directly. I heard it on the show. So the last time I was at the gym, I listened to that episode that you had, and I immediately went to Steve Larson.
Yeah.
And all it took was going to a search engine. I spelled his name wrong the first time because there's no O in it. I found out it, I believe it's L-A-R-S-E-N.
Yeah.
I found it, and I listened to exactly the story you're talking about this favorite book, because I know exactly what you're talking about. And I got him juiced up. For me, I'll tell you how much I listened. I had to speed it up a little bit because Steve's a good storyteller.
Yes.
He's a detail guy. He's we're going to talk about it. And then I'm in the door and I put my hand in the door and I loved it, but I sped it up for my taste. And I just don't think a lot of people would have done that. And I don't know if that sounds like I'm bragging. How can you brag about finding a podcast book? But what I'm doing is if someone I trust named Mike Bucci says, Steve Larson has meant something to me in my career, I'm going to listen to it today, not next week, not I'll get to it, because it's like the 5-minute rule that I've read about. If you can do it in 5 minutes, you must do it in 5 minutes. I can't put that on the calendar. We had to knock it out, and I still wanted to torment you. I didn't get into Russell yet because you mentioned him, and that's the one person I didn't get
to. You'll get there. You'll get there. But listen, we're not going to turn this into a story about how other people are going to get a ton better at all this stuff. We still want to learn more about 1% better. So I got some more tough questions for you.
Yeah.
One is, I want you to tell us, Joe, tell us about a time you packed it in. You quit. This is too much time. It's taken away from my family. It's taken away from my friends. Maybe money. I don't know. Like, but tell us about a time you almost packed it in, but you kept going.
Well, I did an episode early on, and I can't remember what number it was, but I wrote the entire thing out. You know, I said, I'm gonna make this like my piece de resistance. Like, this is, I'm typing it, I'm going to rehearse it, I'm going to massage it. And when I put this out into the vocals, I mean, this is going to be gold. This is where it all changes for me. And we hit launch on Sunday, and it's ready to go, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Here it goes. Crickets. And to this day, Mike, I have not had one person comment on that episode. like the next week, they're like, this is the best guest I ever had. And I'm like, who was it this week? Didn't even remember. But how about last week where I was telling you everything from the heart? You know, and there was
I was in tears. It was my best stuff.
And, you know, you're forcing me outside of my comfort zone to get more comfortable with being on screen and on video. But you know, I've been doing a lot of YouTube content, and I'll tell you another thing. When you look at those numbers, if you decide that numbers are the metrics.
Yeah, there you go.
Woo! I'd be packing it in before I got a chance to get into dadgepreneur years.
Gary V calls them vanity metrics. And I love that expression. If you're into vanity metrics, you're dead, especially now. It's about content. He said, I was making stuff, you know, when nobody was listening. And, you know, hearing Gary talk like that makes me feel like, you know, one day someone's going to watch this video and I'm going to have even more gray hairs in my chin. I don't even know if I'll still have this beard. It's kind of, I mean, you're not cool unless you have a beard in 2018.
Yeah,
so in 2019 is when I decided to grow it out. But yeah, in a couple of years, you know, I don't know how many people are going to listen to this concept, but at the end of the day is I didn't wait to interview you until I had 10,000 people in my email Rolodex. No, we're going to start now. We're going to figure this out. We're going to find our own voices. But vanity metrics will kill you if you think that way. Although I will tell you one thing that does boggle my mind, it does aggravate me to no end, which will definitely be done in a couple of years, is this whole concept of follow, unfollow on Instagram. Have you heard of that before? It's the craziest concept in the world where I'll put out a great piece, I think, right? Just like you said. And it'll sound great. It'll look great. I'll have the right hashtags in there. And I'm thinking about my target market and who's going to follow me after this. And I'll put this up there and I'll come back like 20 minutes later and it'll say, Dadgepreneurs, you have 13 new followers. And I'm like, yeah, 13 new followers. I'm up from 5 to 18. Like, this is great. And then like an hour later, I'm down to 10. I'm like, how did I go from 18 to 10 when this doesn't make any sense? You get caught up in that a little bit. I did for a little bit in the beginning. I think we all do. But yeah, there's a lot of people out there that that's what they do. And they think like that. Joe, your comment before about the one-page business plan where I want to create content, I'm going to figure it out later, I want to provide, I want to give, versus I'm trying to create this like following on Instagram so I can get to my 10,000 followers so I can swipe up is just ridiculous. So I'm glad to hear that that's literally nothing you ever worried about. I got another question for you. This is a good one, at least I think it is. When you look at the 1% Better Project and how many people you've influenced at school, in your life, you've influenced me. I mean, to a large degree, I started Dadgepreneurs and this project because of the 1%. Get the, you know, your podcast in general. I give a lot of credit to you. But when you look at how it's impacted you and how you've kind of transformed through this journey, what do you think are like the one or two biggest things that you've seen yourself kind of get better at or be transformed by?
Well, the ability to try to take complicated things and make them simpler has been something that this journey is really helping with. With the other piece of it is knowing that my life has essentially become the project is extremely reassuring, because I have a long way to go when it comes to fitness. That's one of my number one targets of 2019-20.
Yeah.
Finances, you know, you're talking about all the things that you guys are talking about. Those are two areas where I'm now learning from my guest and then paying it forward to my listener. So I can't give you an elegant answer about these moments, but I think like the embodiment of getting aligned, right? Trying to figure out as my listeners go, you know, I'm trying to lead the way and be an example. That's one of the things that meant a lot to me when you invited me on, is that, you know, no excuses mentality. You know, I have two kids and a wife, a teaching job, and I was coaching baseball until this year. So I was doing a lot of different things and just did it anyway. So I just, the practice what you preach piece of it has just been huge.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Joe, I mean, you've impacted me by going to do this. What's your favorite success story so far, or your favorite story from somebody? Was it that they heard something and then took action? Was there something that you've heard from somebody that listens to your show or that's involved in your life that says, man, because of you, I went and did this? Besides us, of course. But in outside of Mike Bucci, like what's your favorite success story so far from the things you've done?
Three quick snapshots come to mind when you're saying that. One is a college baseball coach in Ohio who just sent me a response to my newsletter that I send out every Wednesday, that just said, hey man, this is inspiring as usual. We're going to work together on something someday. It just meant so much. Like, he's thinking, I like your material so much. I like your mindset. At some point, I just want to put this out in the universe. We're going to work together. I thought that was phenomenal. I had a residence life director in Tennessee tell me that she's using the materials to run her component there.
That's great.
Wow. And what was the other one that I wanted to tell you I just heard the other day? Tonight at the time of air, which won't be live, but for four Tuesdays in a row in this month in February and March, we have the Illinois Council of Teachers and Instructional Coaches are using my podcast to set up a live chat, and as a curriculum, it's like a book group based around the podcast. So Illinois, Tennessee, Ohio, I don't know what it is about the Midwest, but not that Tennessee's there, but you know what I mean? That center of the country. But just to know that I'm in Brookfield, Connecticut, and you know, you're in New York, and that we can reach people we never met is incredible, man. And it's, I don't take it lightly. I really don't.
Joe, you remember how you felt before you did this compared to how you feel now? And what I mean by that is, when you looked into your future, I'm sure you were enjoying teaching and coaching. And as a teacher in New York, I know you got to put in your 30 years and then you get to relax for a while, which is cool. Maybe start some type of encore career after. But, you know, what did the future look like to you before you started doing this compared to what does the future look like now?
Whew. Well, as always, good questions. These are tough. I mean, that one's a tricky one because I think it would feel great to tell you I feel radically different. But I want to, you know, be very candid and say that I look at the future with an optimism then, and I still do now. The only difference is I feel as though the public speaking piece of it, the mentoring piece of it may very well continue after teaching. I didn't necessarily see that as clearly. So I feel like, you know, getting up on a stage, my ideal gig is to be on a stage in a live event with three experts and kind of conducting and orchestrating a panel, because I feel like it feeds all the boxes that I want. So to be able to do that now and in retirement, quote unquote, would be fantastic, because now I can negotiate the three people here and getting them on board. And I think it's a skill set that I've worked on. But yeah, I don't have a transformative moment. And it didn't radically change me. It just validated some of the things that I was afraid to tell the world, some of the things that I felt I had a voice. And I just feel like I'm maybe more validated in transformation.
Yeah, okay. So if I listen to 1% Better, the podcast, the 1% Better Project for 1 year, what are three things that happened to me?
I think you basically start off by saying, why can't I do this? Because I'm not going to hit you with these Instagram model looks, although, you know, don't short-sight it, of course. But, you know, so I'm not a supermodel.
There'll be a moderate amount of air touching, just a moderate amount, nothing crazy.
I think that I don't live in Manhattan where it's all happening. I'm not in LA. So I think you're going to get that piece of, wow, he's doing this for Brookfield, Connecticut. I don't have a perfect microphone and I don't have everything perfect, but I'm doing it. So I think you're going to get empowerment right off the top and say, if he can do it, why can't I do it? I don't want to intimidate someone. I want someone to feel like it's more approachable. Then I think they have to get some tactical things, right? So I think we talk about mindset, language, and behavior on the show. And it's really, for me, I nerd out in the language, you know, communications, back to that. But what people really like are the actions and behaviors. Yep. So whether it's a better way to meditate that we'll talk about, or if it's a better way to approach your boss to ask for that raise, or if it's a better way to negotiate when you're buying your next car, you've had those people on the podcast. So I think you're going to get the flywheel, the Jim Collins type momentum when you're listening. That's what I think. So I don't know if I'm giving you three, but I want to give you a feeling.
Those are good. Those are good.
You know, I want you to think of, yes, I can do it. Why would I wait any longer? No excuses. It doesn't have to be perfect. Let's roll kind of move.
Got it. Yeah, that's great. You know, interestingly enough, you just said something about talking to your boss about, you know, getting a raise. And I was just listening, just to throw this in here, to a video that Tony Robbins made, which was so great, that instead of going in there trying to negotiate with your boss about how much money you should make, or to reframe the past and the future and waiting for that to happen, that you should be proactive with your boss, with your manager, with your CEO, and pre-frame all the stuff that you do. So you can say, how do I grow at this firm? How do I grow at this this employer group, et cetera, based on the fact that I do all these things. And I know you'd know I do a lot of this, but I do these things. If I do these things, how do I grow with responsibility? I thought it was really cool.
Like that.
If you watch content like that from thought leaders, and then for me at least, listening to your podcast just makes me feel like, all right, well, I don't have to go earn $1 million this year or demand $1 million salary. But if I try to get 1% better each day, what does that look like? In my world, what does that look like? I have to go take these types of courses. I have to go read these types of books one at a time. That way in 2 or 3 years, I look like this. If I look like this versus where I am today, there's no way that the person does not pay me or compensate me. Not to mention, I'm not worth this either to myself or to the company. So, you know, as credit to you, your type of podcast makes people better. And I think that's the best way for me to describe, which is so obviously, you know, it's in the name of your podcast, but you're not saying anything that's, you're not doing anything that's incredibly cutting edge and new all the time. It's taking pieces from each people and right, each person that all those books behind you that many times you've read, and maybe you take one piece and you share that one piece, you know, and it's taking the best piece of each thing.
Yeah, in some ways, I hate to say it, some ways I'm a part curator, taking the best, giving it to you, kind of condensing it down. maybe if I'll use my first cooking analogy, but when you're making a reduction, you know, you're keeping the best parts of the sauce. So you're not going to read all these books. You're not into reading like that I am. I'm able to share with you the one nugget from the book. So I think that is part of it. And I think sometimes the title of the show does speak for itself and I just gloss over it. But I mean, just the idea of how can I get 1% better today before my head hits the pillow, it makes it attainable. So that theme just runs through the show. Yes, I'm talking to fancy people, but I'm trying to just synthesize for our listeners so you can then apply it as soon as you hang up the call.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I got a couple more for you and then we'll cut you loose for the day because I know you have a lot of busy things to do tonight. But two things left are, let's assume I was a dad, I had a couple of kids, I have responsibilities, and whether I like my job or I don't like my job is irrelevant. I want to create something. I want to have something for purpose or for profit out there. In your experience the last couple of years, what would be two of your best books or courses? What would be two things that you would tell people you've got to learn from these people, from these courses? What would be, or podcasts, but what would be two things that you'd have me do right away?
Well, I like the way you asked it at the end, specific to my mindset, because a lot of times I love recommendations and I'll give them all day, every day if you want them, but I really want to personalize those recommendations. So anyone who's listening and they want to reach out to me on social media at Ferraro on Air and say, I'm looking for a book on X or a book on Y, I can hit that head on, that I can really make more hits than misses. But I think the last part of your question was what I want to highlight, which is there needs to be some kind of input habit. So Zig Ziglar said, you are who you are because of the thoughts you put into your mind. And there's a million people who have said it differently.
Yeah. Yeah, but sure.
If you don't have a habit and a system for taking in information, like Netflix is one of the great things ever, but you can get caught in the stream there of just watching nonsense. Nothing against Netflix, Hulu, or any of those services, but are they directing you to what you're watching, or are you choosing purposefully? So
interesting.
I really don't care what you read as long as it's in the genre of where you want to go. So a lot of times people will say, is this author any good? And I'll say, I like the author. I like their style. I love her style. But does it speak to you? Does it walk you in the direction? So it's hard to give a blanket, but I will give a couple that I love. Like I mentioned earlier, I listen to Seth Godin. I read his blog every morning. So before I get out of bed, I already hit that. But it doesn't have to be Seth Godin. For you, it needs to be somebody, though, because what's the first time, the entrepreneurs, that you're reading something or listening to something? When does that happen? If it doesn't happen till 6 p.m., I don't think you get the bang for your buck during your main job. So I have this idea going through my head all day of what Seth said, and then it just trickles out into my teaching and to my conversations with the kids. So those are the first ones. I did bring a few books for you, though. So if you're going for Seth, I think Linchpin is the compendium that kind of gives you the most distilled version of Seth. If you're going for habit formation, it's Atomic Habits with James Clear. He was a guest on episode 62, and we love that. And then just one off the radar that people may not pick up is The Compelling Communicator by Tim Pollard. And what he does is basically take an entirely different approach to communication that you don't hear out there. And his idea basically is charisma's great, speaking skill is wonderful, but it's content design that links to the brain. He's talking about CEOs who are speaking in Vegas who blow the doors off the convention. And then 5 minutes afterwards, you'll ask the people what he talked about and they won't be able to come back with the content because of how he designed the presentation.
Interesting.
So this is a huge read for people who are like, well, and I had Tim on episode 50. So if you're not going to read the book, you can listen to episode 50. But the point is, find your guys, your girls, to put the point in the sand and say, I got to get something started. And honestly, for non-readers or people that don't read as much as they want, if you read this on the back, someone will recommend it. Now go read that book. Mike Bucci recommended Steve Larson. Steve Larson liked Russell, and so on and so forth. And that's how I roll.
It's great, man. It's great. Let's fast forward 24 months, Joe. Where is the 1% better project in your eyes?
I got to keep getting better. I have to be, I have to keep getting the type of guests that'll bring value. I have to increase my courage and confidence on the mic, and I need to be live. I need to have people. Okay, let's start here. I need to tap into all the things I've used over the course of my professional life, body language, nonverbal communication, that I'm missing over a Skype connection. So once we do that, right, I'm missing that. I'm leaving money on the table, so to speak. And then I want to be in, I want to mimic the classroom environment with a live audience, because now you're there and you're feeling something that's larger than the sum of its parts. So sitting in your car listening to my podcast is one thing. Being in a small, intimate space where you're seeing me on the stage with a guest, now you're feeling the energy, and we have a Q&A at the end.
Got it.
That has to happen. I feel deeply driven to that connection. And then afterwards, you can walk right up to me and say, man, that was awesome. Or you can walk right by me and go to my guest and say, and then there's that unspoken thing, Mike, where like if you do your job well as an interviewer, sometimes they don't even give you credit. If there's no, Joe, you did a great job bringing that out in James Clear, it's, man, I love James Clear. And secretly, maybe a little place of ego, you sit back and you say to yourself, you knew you made James Clear look as good as he could possibly look on that day. And no one's going to know that. No one had recognized any tricks of the trade that you did. It's just James Clear was able to be his best James Clear on that day because I got out of the way.
That's great. That's great. Last question for you, Joe, is who are two dadgepreneurs that you know that we got to look out for? Who are two people that you know in your world that you say, this guy's going someplace, you guys should connect with him, and maybe tell us a 20-second story about why we should feel that way?
There's a guy named Grant Piros, P-I-R-O-S, that's writing a daily blog. And you want to talk about vanity metrics. I look at this guy's Twitter feed. And it's so low that his follower count is so low that I'm at one point I second guessed myself. I'm saying he's got 102 followers.
But he's awesome.
He's doing a daily blog. Mike, his stuff is killer. Like it's like I read it and he's channeling Derek Sivers. He's channeling James Clear. He's channeling Seth Godin, Adam Grant, all the people I love that are famous. This guy's channeling them. And he's got 102. Like, I get angry. I'm like, you can't. Is anyone reading this guy? He's doing a daily blog. So here's one.
Got to call, getting like Oprah on the phone. Get him like Oprah's book club. But get this.
I don't understand. And I'm proud of it because, like, I feel like now I discovered Grant. And here's the thing for people listening. I didn't just say to you, Grant, I love you. I've been emailing Grant and I've been reaching out and encouraging him. And those are moments, you know, I can't even remember the other young man's name, but I'll give you one other one. But just a quick story is that I watched a YouTube video the other day, showed it to my students. And then you take that next step, dadgepreneurs, take that next step. I then emailed the guy who made the video and I said, man, I just want you to know this video was fire. I mean, it spoke to me.
Yeah.
Go back. Man, I was getting a little discouraged. That's really the kind of fuel I need. True story.
Wow.
And we can all use that. So somewhere along the line, someone's going to email you and say the same thing. So Grant comes to mind. And, you know, another guy that I've been in touch with a long time, listeners of my show will know him. His name's Jeremy Sheetinger. He is the baseball liaison, right, for the ABCA. Now, he has some of those vanity metrics when you see him, but he's also the guy that gives out his cell phone number on air. Yeah. And what I think he's poised to do in the next 24 months is he's going to revitalize an interview show video and taking baseball coaches and kind of connecting the dots between baseball and life. And I'm drawn to that, but his personality is just off the charts.
It's great. So
if you find Sheetinger's work and Grant Piros, two completely different styles,
yeah,
I think you're going to be thrilled.
That's great. And we'll connect on their contact information, meaning their social handles, how guys can connect with them. And that'll be in any links to any of the videos that we have on YouTube or on our blog, et cetera. But guys, I just want to say, Joe, thank you so much for today. This has been a heck of a lot of fun. You are a great guest to have on our show. This has been the most fun podcast video interview I've ever done. which is a true story.
Get that on air, man.
Yeah. And listen, I love the fact that you said one of the things you want to do is get into video, because I think, you know, you're such a great person to listen to. You have a great show. I think you have a lot of value to add to people. You've added a lot of value to my life personally. Otherwise, we wouldn't be on this right now. And I really look forward to seeing where this thing ends up in another year or two and the type of people that you impact. So, Dadgepreneurs, big thank you to Mr. Joe Ferraro and the 1% Better Project. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll connect soon.
Mike, thank you so much, man. It's been an honor.
No doubt. Be well, guys.